We will proceed to case number three, please. McKinney versus Barnhart.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Frederick Daly, and I represent the plaintiff appellant, Mr. McKinney. This court in Donahue versus Barnhart laid out the criteria for a vocational expert witness at a Social Security disability hearing, and what that expert witness, the reliability of the expert witness's testimony must show. Here, in the Donahue case, the court held that the testimony of the expert witness can be relied upon by the ALJ unless the plaintiff challenges it. And when the plaintiff challenges it, then the testimony, which is, must be based upon sufficient facts or data and reliable principles and methods, must be, the underlying data and reasoning must be available on demand. In this case, the counsel did demand that vocational expert produce the data. All the vocational expert did in naming three jobs that were unskilled within the RFC of the hypothetical that the ALJ gave was that she stated that there were two government publications that she relied upon, along with a personal analysis, job analysis that she had done. When asked to state where in those publications her testimony could be substantiated, she couldn't give it. She couldn't give a volume, she couldn't give a page
number.
And
they directed her to come back another time at the expense of the claimant.
That's correct. And the court below held that, well, as long as she identifies her sources, even if it's a personal survey that's in her office, that the claimant, in this case, the plaintiff is a FSI claimant, has no resources, and the government has to have the burden at step five of proving that there are jobs. And what the ALJ did was, he said, okay, well, if you want her to produce the evidence that Donahue here says that she must produce, and the ALJ must have obtained and substantiated in the record, then the FSI claimant has to pay for it. And there's nothing in the law that requires a claimant to pay the VE to bring in the evidence that she's supposed to have in the first place to meet the substantial evidence burden. In fact, the three jobs that were stated by the vocational expert were all refuted. We refuted that by a report submitted by vocational expert Jim Miller, which is in page 243 of the record. And the government has conceded in its brief that the telemarketing job is semi-skilled and that wasn't reconciled, so therefore those jobs cannot be considered. The government also has not refuted that the DOT number was not given for the bench assembly jobs.
And can you talk louder, please?
I'm sorry. The government has not refuted that the DOT number was not given by the vocational expert at the hearing. And we demonstrated through Mr. Miller's report that bench assembly work is not sedentary, but is light and medium. So therefore, those jobs cannot be considered. Also, the job of telephone quotation clerk, of which there were only 1,000, which is not even a significant number, were also jobs that we requested that the vocational expert substantiate on how she extrapolates, because she had no document that showed that number. She said she extrapolated, but she wasn't able to demonstrate how she extrapolated the number. So therefore, now the government claims that even if those three jobs are refuted, that's de minimis, because the government is claiming that this was a grids case. It's an argument that was never made below, so therefore it was waived. And it wasn't a grids case, meaning that the residual functional capacity by the, there was a finding by the administrative law judge, was not that the plaintiff could do the full range of sedentary work. the administrative law judge, page 24 of the record, in his decision of finding number 12, had referred to the grids, but then qualified it by saying, although the claimant's additional non-exertional limitations do not allow him to perform the full range of sedentary work. Indeed, at the administrative hearing, when the administrative law judge gave hypotheticals, the hypothetical that those three jobs relied upon was a modified RFC, where the administrative law judge asked the vocational expert, what is the full range of sedentary, and she indicated that one would have to perform standing, walking, bending for up to one-third of the workday. Administrative law judge then said at page 365 of the record, what about a limited range of sedentary work? Are there any jobs with a limited range? And the vocational expert said, well, you have to at least be able to walk to your work site. And then based on that residual functional capacity, the three jobs were named. So therefore, clearly, the administrative law judge made a finding that there was a limited range of sedentary work. This is not a grids case. Next, the administrative law judge, in his first hypothetical, referred to the plaintiff as not being able to stoop. Vocational expert said, no job. In the record, there's a lot of medical evidence that, and just by the mere fact that the administrative law judge, in his own hypothetical, would indicate that the plaintiff could not stoop, would show that he recognized that there is medical evidence and facts, including the plaintiff's testimony, that demonstrate that he has difficulty with the flexion of his knee, which is required in stooping. Now, it's not our position that the administrative law judge has to adopt as a finding that there's inability to stoop. But under the regulations, in 20 CFR 404.1527, the regulations say that we'll always give good reason. So when there's evidence in the record that demonstrates that there's difficulty with stooping, the administrative law judge may not skirt the issue of there being no jobs by ignoring it. He must deal with it head on, and he should have, in his decision, indicated why it is that he now has found that any ability to stoop would not affect the plaintiff. So the administrative law judge, he erred by ignoring totally the stooping issue and ignoring totally the report of Mr. Miller. Also, his credibility finding was deficient. It only referred to the objective medical and the evidence in the record, not substantiating plaintiff's testimony, instead of meeting the Zarowski Seventh Circuit criteria, which also refers to Social Security ruling 96-7P.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Mona Ahmed. I represent the Commissioner of Social Security. I'm going to take the stooping issue first. There's no evidence in this record that Mr. McKinney was completely unable to stoop. The ALJ found that he could do occasional bending, which would include occasional stooping. The definition of stooping in the Commissioner's rulings is bending the body downward and forward by bending the spine at the waist. Mr. McKinney has a problem with his knee. There's nothing wrong with his back. There's nothing wrong with his spine. There's nothing in the record that indicates that he was not able to bend his body downward and forward by bending the spine at the waist. In fact, when he went to physical examinations and was examined by physicians, he demonstrated full range of motion in his spine. He was clearly capable of bending his spine at the waist. So given the fact that there's no evidence that he was completely unable to stoop, the argument that the ALJ was required to find him disabled on that basis is plainly without merit. And the argument that the ALJ was required to go into some specific detail about why he was not finding him disabled based on his complete inability to stoop doesn't make any sense when the ALJ found that he was not completely unable to stoop. He was able to stoop and to do other forms of bending on an occasional basis. Uh, Moving on to the grid issue. This is a case where the ALJ could have referred to the grid as a framework for the decision. The ALJ did say in his decision that given the limitations, the RFC was for sedentary work with occasional walking, occasional standing, and occasional bending. Given the bending limitation, which is a non-exertional limitation, the ALJ found that that would limit the range of sedentary work that he could do. But it wouldn't limit the range of sedentary work substantially. And the commissioner's rulings, again, make that very clear. In several rulings, it's indicated that sedentary work requires only occasional walking and standing and only occasional stooping. So given the plain RFC finding of occasional walking, standing, and bending, he clearly could have done a substantial range of sedentary work. So the fact is that the ALJ could have referred to the grid as a framework for the ALJ's decision. The ALJ didn't do so. The ALJ looked to the vocational expert's testimony because that testimony was in the record. But given the fact that the ALJ could have used the grid, it would seem futile for this court to remand.
Right.
Well, if there were...
It's after the fact. He didn't see fit to use it. So that's a non-issue. That was his decision at the time.
That's true. The ALJ didn't use the grid, but if the RFC finding is supported,
one that you can't overcome.
Pardon me?
You can't overcome that but because he didn't use it.
Well, I think that that this court has, in the past, has taken a practical approach to looking at Social Security cases, and it's indicated a willingness to affirm in certain appropriate cases on a ground that was not cited by the ALJ, where it's clear that the remand wouldn't really serve a useful purpose.
Well, isn't this the case where the claimant asked for the proof of the vocational expert, and the expert didn't have it, and then so the ALJ went out of his way without authority and ordered. Said if you want further evidence, that you want the support, you want the evidence, she will look it up for you, but at your expense.
Well, I think that's a different issue, and I'll certainly address that. The ALJ, the vocational...
That would be helpful.
Pardon me?
That would be helpful.
Okay. the ALJ, in this case, heard the testimony from the vocational expert. She identified a number of jobs that... that someone with an RFC for sedentary work with occasional standing and walking, in the hypothetical question, there was also a limit in concentration, which the ALJ ultimately found was not warranted and did not include in his RFC finding. But the vocational expert identified a number of jobs. The claimant's counsel, when examining the vocational expert, asked her how she arrived at the number that she came up with. The vocational expert then went through her method of how she came up with the numbers. She said, I start with statistics that I get from the Department of Labor, from the Bureau of the Census, and those statistics provide the number of jobs for a cluster of occupations, a group of occupations. There's no publication that will tell you there are such and such number of bench sorter jobs in Chicago. That doesn't exist. And so she, along with her colleagues, uses a method of getting the numbers through labor market surveys. And she and her colleagues had a number of labor market surveys that they looked at when they came up with the numbers. The ALJ was satisfied with that explanation of how the vocational expert came up with her numbers. And ultimately, the ALJ... he's really playing two roles. He's playing the role as, if we analogize to district court, which is not completely in an analogous situation, but there the district court plays the role of the gatekeeper when we're talking about expert testimony. And so the ALJ was not only playing the role of gatekeeper, but also the role of fact finder. And knowing as the fact finder that he was satisfied with the explanation that the vocational expert gave, in this particular case, it doesn't seem unreasonable that that the claimant, if she wanted to rebut the testimony further and to get, go into further detail, that the claimant would bear the cost of getting that evidence. Ultimately,
is that right? Or shouldn't the government's witnesses come to the proceeding prepared? Don't they have that obligation?
Well, the ALJ was satisfied that the
vocational
expert...
I didn't ask you that. You're not answering what I asked you.
Yes, the vocational expert should be prepared to...
They didn't come prepared to be able to back up their findings.
I agree with that. And this vocational expert did back up her findings. The ALJ was satisfied with the information that she provided. And ultimately, it's the claimant's burden to establish that they're disabled, and that burden shifts within the sequential evaluation, but it never shifts completely off of the claimant. Ultimately, it's the claimant's burden, and so since the ALJ was satisfied with the evidence that was given, it doesn't seem unreasonable that the claimant, if he wanted to rebut that evidence, that he would go to the expense to do that. And in fact, that's what happened in this case. The claimant did go and get some additional vocational evidence on his own. But I think I would like to get back to the grid issue, because this really is a case where, notwithstanding any dispute about whether or not the vocational expert's testimony was good enough or reliable enough, the remedy for that shouldn't be a remand, because this could be a grid case. And again, I think this court has indicated a willingness to affirm decisions where it's clear that remanding would not serve a useful purpose. And this seems like that's such a case.
If it's so clear that the grid can be used, why didn't the ALJ use it?
Well, I'm afraid I can't answer that. I don't know why the ALJ didn't use the grid, but if the RFC finding is supported, and I think it's very clear here that the RFC
wasn't supported very well. I mean, it was a contested point. So the ALJ looked over the bypassed the grid, which you said clearly gave him a ground for decision, simply to get caught in this quagmire of a vocational expert who didn't have very good backing for what she had to say. It doesn't make any sense that an ALJ do that.
Well,
he's looking for problems.
I can't explain why the ALJ chose the VE's testimony over the grid, except that, again, the ALJ was satisfied with what the VE had to say and did have that testimony and had that evidence. So notwithstanding that fact, I think it remains clear that given what the rulings say about what it means to do sedentary work, that the ALJ could have used the grid.
Putting aside for one moment what this ALJ was willing to accept, in the normal course of things, would you expect an ALJ to accept a vocational expert who simply said, well, I looked in a couple of books? And that's basically what she told him. I looked in a couple of books. And then they use that great word, I extrapolated. And if someone says to me, I extrapolated, it means, they thought it up from there, but they really can't tell me how. It was an intuitive thing.
May I respond? My time is up.
Yes, you have half a minute.
Okay. I think that we have to keep in mind that this is someone who was called upon to testify because of their expertise. This vocational expert had master's degree in rehabilitation counseling. She had 10 to 12 years of experience. Her work involved doing labor market surveys.
And someone asked a simple question, how do you back it up? And she said, I can't. I don't have the material here.
She did not have it with her.
Right. Fine. Then they should learn that they ought to have it.
But she didn't give any explanation either. I mean, she didn't even verbalize what kind of a formula she uses, how she balances these various reports. She really didn't get into it.
I disagree. I think she did explain the method that she used, from the starting point and going through and using the labor market surveys.
Well, she looked it up in a couple of books. I read the transcript. That's what she said.
I think her testimony was a little more detailed than that. I'd be happy to go over it if you want.
Thank you. Time is up.
Okay, thank you.
Do you have anything to add, please?
First of all, if SSI claimants, who are the poorest people out there trying to get disability benefits, are going to have to pay, and they have no money, so if it's going to be required that they pay for the government's Step 5 burden vocational expert to produce the evidence that they should have on their own anyway, Donahue has no value from the Seventh Circuit because it's not going to be applied. Secondly, in giving the definition of stooping, the full definition under Social Security ruling 8310, which we put in our main brief at page 25, is that there's flexibility of the knees. It's not for the government to come up with reasons that the ALJ maybe could have come up with on rejecting flexibility of the knees. There's an awful lot of evidence in there, even 35%, one doctor put, of damage, not to the whole leg, but right to the medial meniscus, and that's where the tear was. And there's enough evidence in there, in fact, as I mentioned before, for the judge himself to have put into his hypothetical, and he has to deal with it. It has to be dealt with in his decision.
Thank you, counsel.
Before you sit down, how much more did you want at as a vocational expert? What would have been the testimony, in your view, if you should have given?
I wanted to be able to review the documentation she was referring to, the county business patterns, the other ones, labor statistics. I wanted the extrapolation numbers. I wanted her survey. You can see that what Mr. Miller did when we put his report in the record, and that shouldn't be necessary for us to have to go out and purchase a report like
what
that.
What did he do that she didn't do?
He put his labor market survey in there. He contacted, I guess the way that they normally do it, some employers that showed that out of the 1,266 telemarketing jobs, 77% were part-time, and they have to be full-time jobs for Social Security. So we refuted that. He mentioned that the DOT, she couldn't give a DOT number even for bench assembly. He showed that it was not sedentary. It was light and medium. And, it can't be a Grids case because the judge, if you trace the path of his reasoning, the judge put that it was significantly less than full range of sedentary work. You know, he had in his RFC, in his hypothetical, and in his decision, he didn't say he could occasionally stand, walk, and bend. He said on occasion, and he had put in the hypothetical, sit, stand at will. So it wasn't occasionally. He modified occasionally and put it down to on occasion. Okay, so
Thank you, counsel.
To answer your question, we should be able to verify, as Donahue says, her methods, and see if that methodology is the correct method and comes up with the right numbers. And Mr. Miller showed how he got his numbers.
Thank you, counsel. We will proceed to case number 4, please. Timothy Gerard.